Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are, 9/20/2016, not much longer left. One more show this month.
Yeah, but we have a lot of things happening. I mean, we have a pretty packed schedule in terms of economic and central bank hoo-ha this week, starting with 11 o'clock tonight, approximately. The Bank of Japan is going to do something magnanimous.
Yeah, what?
I don't know, but they have to do something because there's been a lull in their activity. Their yen has been climbing. Their bonds have been rising in terms of their yield. And they've been talking about it so much that there's once again, a very high expectation for them to do something. So there's been a lot of speculation that they'll do something like, well, instead of $80 billion a month, this is a magic number, by the way. We did it, $80 billion a month, and Europe did $80 billion a month of bond buying. And now the Central Bank of Japan may change from their $80 billion. This is big, to 70 to 90 billion. this is what they're talking about. Seriously,
that's nuts.
Yeah, this is what would make a big difference in the environment, because what that will do is potentially make it look like there's a little bit more, but maybe not really do anything more. Why don't they just say we'll do somewhere between 50 and 100 and just leave it at that? It's stupid. But it is central bank activity.
Yeah. So I guess it's better than nothing.
Yeah, there'll be a big move between today and tomorrow on the currencies, because not only do we have the Bank of Japan tonight, but we have the Fed tomorrow with their interest rate move, and speculation is all over the place. About a 19% chance of a rate hike as far as Fed fund futures are concerned tomorrow. But there's been a lot of murmurs behind the scenes that in order to maintain their credibility, the Fed's actually going to do something tomorrow. I don't know.
I do really doubt it.
I doubt it too. I do. But, you know, with all the things going on, I think it's really fascinating how we have the Fed coming a day after the Bank of Japan, which are the two major powerhouses in the world. So I think the Fed's going to probably wait till they see what happens here and then kind of go back to their books and figure things out. So we'll see what happens. But markets generally have been kind of flat to a little bit on the sell side. We saw that the S&P was virtually flat yesterday. I mean, they finished the day at like 0.04 on the downside. Today was like the same on the upside.
Yeah, that's called flat.
Yeah, very flat. And some speculation that some of these variations and maybe some of the pressure on the sell side has been because Donald Trump has been starting to catch up in the polls. I don't know about that, but we have a quick election.
Well, the
update.
Polls are useless, and it's possible he's ahead in the polls.
But
they're useless. So
it doesn't matter if they're ahead. So I mean, I think. The polls that I saw is you're in the lead, and I'm of course as your vice president, we're in the lead at this point. I saw a poll that said that.
Yeah.
So just as useful, right, on that.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. By the way, I'll mention that you can find all the information, the show notes, and lots of other handy dandy information over on dhunplugged.com. A couple of things I want to talk about. I'm holding back this discussion that I'm going to have about Wells Fargo.
Didn't we talk about them last week?
Well, we talked about it last week, but then some further things have come into light. I know somebody's going to start calling them, you know, change their name to, instead of Wells Fargo, to Wells Will Foggy. You know what I'm saying? That's going to be a new name that's going to be coming out.
That's not going to work.
No, it's not going to work. But let's talk a little bit about home builders. We saw that the home builder confidence gauge was up incredibly this month. We saw 65 print versus mid-50s. And obviously, home builders, this is a gauge of the outward view of home builders and what they're thinking in the future. So that's kind of a good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the underlying construction and home sales, and the whole industry is a very major part of the driver of our economy.
I'm noticing a lot of articles now from the financial press about, oh, this city and that city doesn't have enough homes. It's like they're trying to boost it a little bit.
There's not enough.
The top 10 cities with not enough homes.
Yeah, we got to squeeze a few more in there, right?
Yeah.
And if we don't do that, we'll build apartment buildings.
Well, that's what they're really doing most of this. From what I can tell, they're doing that to an extreme. I think this is a disaster waiting to happen.
Is there that many people immigrating into the U.S. that we have a need for all this housing? Or is there, where are all these people living now that are not in these new apartments?
A lot of millennials living with their parents and they're trying to get out, but they have to go to an apartment, but the apartments are so expensive.
That's a good point.
I mean, there's this building in San Francisco, which is about to tip over and fall down, called the Millennial Building. And it's selling many of the apartments for $2 million apartments, the condos. It's a condo place. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I have no idea. All I know is that there's a shortage. Ever since 2000, there's been a shortage, it seems to me.
Right. Well, we got to mention that GoPro, it's always nice to talk about when there's a new piece of equipment on the market that could be exciting. Last week, we talked about, of course, the Apple iPhone 7 and 7 Plus and some of the new things that are going on there and their Apple Watch. But this week, the long-awaited debut of the GoPro drone. It's called the Karma drone. And it's a foldable drone, has some cool stabilization features, but it has one problem.
Doesn't work.
$799. And you have to get cameras with that.
Oh, there's no camera on it.
I don't think there's a camera. I'm pretty sure it's not a
camera. This is not that crazy one that you keep seeing promoted that really doesn't exist, that you unwrap it from your bag and throw it in the air.
I mean, no, this is in a box. The arms kind of fold in, so it's a much thinner box that you can carry it in instead of that big square thing that you got to carry. And then they also unveiled, by the way, a new camera, which is the GoPro Hero 5. One of the cool things about this, though, I'll tell you, that I think is kind of interesting, you don't need a case for underwater. So it's waterproof only down to 10 meters, but still, that's kind of a nice benefit versus, because in the past, when you put the case on, you have another plastic area to shoot through.
Yeah, it just screws up photos. Right. Screws up the pictures of the movie.
And the sound could be, you know, an issue.
Muffled.
Yep. It has automatic electronic stabilization. It has a GPS location data. Stock was up about 3-4% on the news. And then I think reality struck today where I guess there was really not that much of a difference. It has the same 4K video, 12 megapixel photo capabilities, which is the same as its last device that was out. Stock was down about 8% today.
Wow.
Yeah, can't get out of its way. I think the idea of what's so great about their drone, I don't think there was a big deal. The one thing they did announce, which I don't think is but that you can automatically send and upload your videos and pictures to a new video sharing service, GoPro Plus, if you take out a subscription. Now, is this anything that's exciting to you?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, the reason I believe it's kind of exciting is that this kind of service is going to be used more and more as people start taking sketchy videos.
Oh.
And they're worried about, for example, say you have this little camera and you're in Syria and you're flying around at taking videos of something, and then they shoot the thing down, blow it out of the sky. Where's your videos?
So you're saying the automatic upload, but you got to wonder why we couldn't automatically upload these to like Amazon Photos and Video or Google Drive or Dropbox or pick your poison.
Well, I don't know what these other automatic systems, there are systems that you could do it. Google, I think, has some mechanism, but it's something that I think is not the easiest thing to set up unless it's designed for it.
I mean, you could set up.
I could be wrong. Maybe
you could set up iCloud Photos, which automatically, every time you take a picture on your Apple iPhone, it goes up there. Right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's what you want.
Right. You can also set up Amazon Photos, a new thing. You get 5 gigs for free if you have an Amazon Prime account.
Yeah.
And that's kind of cool. I actually did that today. I uploaded a bunch of photos that I was sharing with some people in there because I figured, it's free space. What the hell? And it made it pretty easy.
Well, maybe there's maybe they have some features in their uploading system that, that benefits them or works particularly well with their cameras.
Well,
generally speaking, my experience that anyone who buys a GoPro in the first place, they tend to be borderline professionals.
Mm-hmm.
And they tend to have a tend, they use the word over and over, they tend to spend more than they should, thinking there's something special about, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, there's a lot of gear you can get out there that will do everything a GoPro will do, a lot cheaper.
Mm.
But it's not designed for professionals.
Right.
I had to use the GoPro for a while, the early one, and I found them very awkward and difficult to use, and I didn't see what the advantage was. It's just that, you know, you got a sensor. Is made by the two or three companies that make the CMOS sensors. And you have a lens made by a few companies that have the lens. Most of the really fancy lenses are all kind of patented,
mm-hmm.
mostly by Japanese and a few German companies, which makes it very difficult for the Koreans, for example, to get make good cameras. Same with the Chinese. And what has GoPro got? Did they patent some special zoom lens? I doubt it.
I mean, the thing that they have is, first of all, a name, one of the first in on this. And once you get to working, how you know, using it and understanding it, which I have yet to master, it's easy. However, you know, and you could also actually attach it to a smartphone where you can control it from a smartphone, which is good. It's compact. It's durable. But I agree. I mean, if there's other devices that are very similar to this, you know, what do they have? That's why I think they felt it necessary to have some kind of subscription service to get recurring revenue. That's all I think this is about.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Right? I mean, what else is it? I mean, the CEO has talked about this whole thing about making it a social revolution, a video sharing, you know, something out there that was going to be like almost the extreme sports equivalent to a YouTube, right? But then again, I'm thinking, well, if there's YouTube,
it's already on
put
YouTube.
It on YouTube. What's the difference? Just put your GoPro stuff on YouTube. So he's been talking about this whole social revolution with video and stuff like that. I'm like, isn't that called like Facebook or something? I don't know. I don't understand what he's talking about. So I think that he was backed into a corner with the fact that, you know, once you buy a GoPro, unless it breaks or for some reason you need a new one, there's no reason to buy another one because they're not coming up with any new major technology that requires you to buy one.
Right.
And therefore, they have to have something that's recurring.
Right. And if it's as rugged as they say, or that you even think it is.
Right. Exactly.
You don't need that, pushes it out even further.
Yep. All right. Let's go on to a really another. This now, I'm going to give you a hint about this. It's another technology related story. Okay. You got that? Another technology related story. So it seems that the headline is, it seems that the U.S. is going after Deutsche Bank. I don't know if you saw this headline, but. Due to the bad deals that they did and some of the packaging of mortgages and selling off the securitized assets and things of that nature, the U.S. government is going after Deutsche Bank for the sum of $14 billion. $14 billion. Now, I don't think, first of all, that any of the banks here in the U.S. were actually, I don't think they had to pay upwards of $14 billion. That seems like a lot of money for a foreign company, especially. That was involved, but maybe if it was there. But do you have, with the hint I gave you, and now with the number 14 billion, do you see any kind of interesting similarities here?
You mean Apple?
Yeah. Apple was fined or is going to be sought to pay $14 billion
in taxes.
In taxes to
back
Europe.
Taxes. Yes, this is going to start getting worse. Now, people say, gee, we have all these trade agreements and we don't want to have a trade war. So we're going to have a kind of, I guess, a, what would you call it, kind of war. It's a war between,
it's,
you know.
It's like a legal loophole war or something.
Or a enforcement war, law enforcement war, where these guys are just go, you get your, and I've always believed that half the time the EU has been trying to gouge American companies because they can't compete with them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they can't compete with Microsoft. There's nothing like Microsoft in Europe. They can't compete with Apple. There's nothing like Apple in Europe. In fact, there's nothing that even comes close to Apple. I mean, Nokia maybe for a while, but there's nothing in Europe that competes with Apple. They don't do anything in so far as this sort of technology. They've done very well with MEMS. The microelectronic and mechanical devices that you can use for all kinds of things. They're cool. That's one technology the Europeans have done well with, but most of it is just like, it's not, they're not competitive. So they gouge us. They just say, well, we can't compete. We'll just take your money.
You know, they're also, but they are getting money already from many of the firms that, because they have a better, for some of the countries in Europe, have a more, or a lower tax environment. And it's very inviting for companies to go there. And as such, they are getting at least a piece of the action. They should be happy about that.
They should. Mm. They should be happy with what they've got.
Yep. And while we're at it, the Financial Times reported that the fast food giant McDonald's may be ordered to pay $500 million in back taxes to Luxembourg.
Oh, brother.
How many hamburgers are they possibly selling in Luxembourg?
A lot.
I guess. They're being investigated by Brussels over a tax ruling which allowed that firm to pay no taxes in the U.S. or in Luxembourg, I guess.
There's a lot of burgers in Luxembourg.
Luxemburger. We have a little bit of a short show tonight, so we're going to kind of move fast. So you got to keep up. If you know, this is not one of those shows where you can press the 2x speed. You may have to slow it down a little bit. Let's talk about the Close to the Pin competition. Quick question for you. We need a new name, a new idea, something for next week. We currently have the Dow Jones big competition running, but I was thinking about, do you want to maybe add something like Herbalife or Electronic Arts, Wells Fargo?
Oh, Electronic Arts. Oh, Wells would be interesting.
Yeah, that's what I thought you'd say.
Well, you're right.
Now, you know, a stock that we've been talking about, you heard me talk about this several times, Sarepta Therapeutics. I had it twice on the game.
Right.
Got stopped out. And then something fascinating happened last week. One of the lead guys, a doctor who was against approval of their particular drug for a condition, one of the conditions of muscular dystrophy, Duchenne syndrome, he left abruptly. And what was interesting was the stock shot up about, 25% once somebody found that his name, this doctor's name, was no longer on the, I think it was a he, but anyway, this doctor, particular doctor's name, was no longer on the FDA's roll. And once that was confirmed, and he was the dissenter on this, stock shot up like 25%, thinking that after all this time, somehow miraculously, the drug will get approved in no time, right?
Ah.
Fast forward a week, the drug gets accelerated approval status.
Wow.
Stock's up 90%.
Well, that'd have been a nice one to pick.
Well, we did pick it a couple of times. We got out. But I bet you, I'm just saying, I'm just have a feeling. Yeah. We had it for clients, by the way. We held that position.
Did you get rid of it?
Sold it. We made about 140% on it.
And now you're out.
Out.
You think it's a good short?
You know what? I'd let it go a couple more days. I think that the question, first of all, also they came out with something that troubled me was do you want the cost per year is that they're projecting for this drug
per person? $10,000.
No, pshaw. Let me say that you're not close. $300,000
for the drug.
Yep, per year.
They should find these guys and line them up and shoot them.
I mean, there's a lot of costs that go into it, so they have to recoup that. Okay, I get that. You know, they're a for-profit organization, but I don't know how many people actually. I think it's only in the low thousands, maybe 1,000 people that have this particular, or maybe a bit more. That have this particular syndrome, and so
let's gouge them.
Yeah, so I guess you got to spread it over the amount of people. So I thought once I saw that after hours, the press conference came out and they talked about this $300,000 price tag per year. That's when I kind of said, you know what, we'll take our profits. That was enough. Stock was up another like 10% today, but I'm okay. We thought it would hit about 50, and it did. It was down as low as 7. On the original disapproval of their drug application, and then just ran right back up over, didn't ran right back up. It took a while. Moving along. I'm just going to hit the hot topics here.
That just sounds like a short to me. Yeah, sounds like a very fishy operation.
Yeah, well, they have a decent drug, but yeah. There's two folks that are offering multiple millions to Donald Trump. First of all, we got LinkedIn's co-founder, Reid Hoffman. He's going to be offering $5 million to veterans if Republican nominee Donald Trump releases his tax returns in time for the presidential debate, which I guess is next week.
Just coming up shortly.
Yep. Then Mark Cuban is offering $10 million to charity of Trump's choice if he's allowed to do an interview of Trump him and just mano a mano for 4 hours on Trump's policies and their general substance. 4 hours. Who does a four-hour interview?
Nobody.
An hour. I can go with an hour, but 4 hours. I don't know where that comes from.
I have no idea. Trump won't probably take that offer at all. No,
$10 million.
The way he sees it is like, you know, is he really going to, I mean, the way I would look at it is I'm actually going to get to $10 million. I mean, maybe there's some proviso in there where it went 3 hours and 59 minutes.
Right.
Or, exactly. You know, to get, you drank too much water.
Right. No breaks.
No money for you.
Right. Lyft recently, and this I thought was a real sharp stick in the eye. Lyft, you know, the ride sharing organization, yeah. Competition to Uber, recently announced that in a few years, all of their cars are going to be self-driving.
Right.
Now, here I am, a Lyft driver, you know, and I get the news flashes across my phone as I'm waiting for somebody to take them on a trip for, you know, 20 minutes where I'll make like $1.50. And I see this announcement going that Lyft is going to work on the process of basically firing me within a few years. What kind of
incentive? That's their goal.
What kind of incentive is this for me to like do a really good job?
Uber said the same thing. Uber's going to fire everybody too. They're working on the set. That's where this Lyft announcement came from.
Yeah.
It's a bounce back from Uber. The joke to me, and I've said it before, on I haven't said it on this show, but I say it everywhere I can. I thought this was about ride sharing.
Yeah, yeah.
I've got a car. I want to go here. And so maybe I can pick somebody up. They can give me gas money. Ride sharing. That's nothing illegal about that. It's just sharing. I'm sharing a ride. Oh, no, I'm not competing with taxis. I'm sharing. And now we got this? Are you kidding me?
It is quite a mess. Not to mention they're both losing money like crazy.
Yeah, well, yeah, they'll lose more. They'll use, this is the old watermelon truck gag.
Now you have a
buy more trucks.
If you have a self-driving car, and let's say the car is done for the evening, and the car...
Why would it ever be done?
I don't know, but what happens if it needs to go get gas? What happens there?
It goes to a gas station.
And what does what?
It sits there waiting.
What if it needs to get like a tire plugged?
How about this? Here's what I would do. If I would work for these companies, I'd be... Okay, here's the deal. You're in the self-driving car, and it's going around. It's running out of gas. It needs gas. You get a message. You will get a free ride. That ride that you're doing right now is free, or you're getting $5 off or something if you put the gas in the tank. Yep. Now, I'm assuming actually something more aggressive with the self-driving cars. I think they're all going to be electric, and they can just go plug themselves in and come and go from the electric charging station.
Or there's something like at stoplights, there's some kind of a underground transmission of electrical waves to charge the car or something like that.
Yeah, until somebody walks over it.
That would be a little bit tough. That's, you know, that's your hair stands up and it's not, you know, you start grinding your teeth real hard. Not good. It'd be fun to watch maybe for a moment. Get her off the grid. All right, this is kind of an important item that I think most people need to understand, something that's going on. We have one of the first reclassifications of the S&P 500 sectors since 1999. We have something called the 11th sector. Mm. What happened on Monday was, this is something that we knew that was coming, that the financial sector, so there's materials and there's utilities and healthcare and all these different sectors, 10 different sectors up until recently. The financial sector had financial stocks, financial-oriented companies, and real estate investment trusts all together, all batched up together. So as of Monday, they split off the REITs or the real estate investment trust into their own category.
Yeah.
And that kind of caused some problems, by the way.
Well, I can see that.
So the first problem it had was you kind of split this off on a Monday, and all of a sudden the valuation and calculation of the actual underlying ETF was kind of screwed up for the Guggenheim S&P Equal Weighted Financial ETF, where 1,000 trades tied to hundreds of thousands of dollars in shares were actually had to be canceled as erroneous trades because they were just so out of whack on the price of the sale that they had to stop them and cancel all these trades. The second thing is, it's interesting because going back to the central bank discussion, where central banks like the Bank of Japan, owns like 60% of the REITs, the publicly traded REITs on the Nikkei. The question is the S&P group splitting this off in order to not create an imbalance if, in fact, the U.S. central bank, the Fed, decides that they, too, want to start purchasing REITs?
You'd think that would ever happen in a million years?
You know what? The playbook that everybody uses over time, because, of course, they see what wonderful things it has accomplished, is the Japanese central bank playbook. Because of an aging population, because of stagnation of growth, all the things, decelerating growth overall, and deflationary environment, everybody's having this happen over time, a little bit later in time, and they see that all the things the Japanese government or the Japanese central bank has done, by the way, just a point of reference, don't tell anybody, John, but it hasn't worked for shit. It doesn't.
So what you're telling me is that somebody sits there, watches the Japanese central bank, watch them fail with these policies.
Right.
Fail terribly.
Yeah.
And they say, you know, that's not a bad idea.
All kidding aside, that's exactly what's going on. Look at what's going on. Think about it. Yeah, they've been buying bonds. They've been buying
stock.
They've been devaluing their currency. They've been buying a tremendous amount of stock, buying real estate. All right, so put real estate and stocks aside for a moment. But the things that they've been doing for years, trying to pump up inflation that hasn't worked, it's just kept them above water, is exactly what every other country's central bank is doing these days. So the question is it possible? Yeah, it's possible. Would not be something that I think is a good idea. Although some players believe that by buying REITs, it will prop up the real estate market and as such will create more jobs and an industry that will be growing. We'll have a major housing bubble, of course. But it's a better way than actually buying bonds to try to prop up the inflation, et cetera. I think we just get rid of the damn central banks to begin with, and we'd be a lot better off because they're a major problem to begin with.
Yeah, a lot of people think that.
Yep. All right, moving along. So we talked about close to the pin. That's running. That's good. The Millennial Portfolio, we're going to skip that because we have to talk about a couple of things. First of all, you know, a lot of we've talked about this in the past, the strength of the U.S. dollar. And is that good or bad for companies? You know, we heard many times from Treasury secretaries over the years that, well, a strong dollar is good for the United States, right? You've heard that.
You hear both.
Yeah. But the studies are something like this. According to an annual foreign sales report of the S&P 500, so in other words, the amount of sales coming from foreign, from non-U.S. areas, so sold by S&P companies outside the U.S. So in 2015, it was 44.3%. That's a lot. I mean, globalization is here. Yep. No question about it. It's down, though, from 47.8% in 2014 and the average 46% from 2009 to 2013. In 2006, it was 43.6. And these correlate really well to when the dollar was strong versus weak. So a lot more sales are coming in from outside. So I think we better beware of how much we really push the, I think that's something the Federal Reserve is looking at. We don't want to push the dollar too far.
Hmm.
So that does inevitably hurt. I'll mention, of course, if you like the show, if you want to donate, please do so. This is not a time to worry too much about a budget. This is something where you should just do it with an open arms. You can go over to the site and click the donate button and donate. We're not going to hock you and punch you over the head about it, but if you don't do it, something bad's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's like this is a hell and damnation sermon. All right, we have to talk about this Wells Fargo situation. And I want you to take a look at all the notes and go down to a button there. This is on DH Unplugged on the show notes for this episode, episode number, 330. I want you to look at the picture that I clipped from the
What Happened button?
Yeah. Let me just set this up. This is a picture that I snipped from the video that was on C-SPAN of the swearing in of John Stumpf, who is the CEO of Wells Fargo, who is now speaking in front of the Senate Banking Committee. He was about to get a grilling. Okay. So there's all these intros and all this stuff. And then he stands up And they say you need to raise your right hand and be sworn in. So this is all of a sudden a different picture than I saw a few days ago of this guy. Do you notice anything there?
Yeah, somebody came along and broke his fingers.
Seriously, right?
Yeah.
It's like the mafia said, you know, we...
You're going to get screwed on this deal from you, buddy.
Yeah. Somebody came out with like a
bolt-pin hammer. Here's what we think about. Yeah, or a vice press, and they put his hand in it.
So he's standing up there. You got to see the... Well, you need to go look at the
picture.
It's very
funny. It's the funniest picture I've seen for a long time, actually.
Something's not right here. I started thinking about this whole situation more and
more. Well, this is the time that Harry Reid was all beat. Somebody beat the crap out of him.
Yep.
And he comes up with this cockamamie story that was just an exercise machine that broke.
Right.
They broke his eye socket. They just pounded. He was a mess.
Yep. Yep. The old wicked bicycle in the house.
These guys are crooked.
So what's interesting is now, by the way, you did call this. Senator Warren is calling for a criminal investigation. Calls for his resignation. And says there needs to be a criminal probe into the scandal.
Well, this is interesting. The FTC has already presented the Justice Department with a list of bad actors in this whole fiasco. And the Justice Department said, we're not interested.
Really? Is it not their jurisdiction? Or is it...
The Justice Department is supposed to pick that up and say, okay, we're going to prosecute. They decided no.
You know,
this will be interesting.
I started thinking about this. We're talking about 2 million accounts, by the way. That's just as a point of reference. That's a lot of accounts.
Ridiculous number. Right. This is racketeering.
Yep. The other thing I was thinking about was that because of those 2 million, however many per year and whatever, there was fees generated, right? Do they now have to two things? Do they have to, one, go back and adjust their earnings backwards? I think that's going to have to happen, right?
Oh, that's a good point.
The second thing is that there was a lot of bonuses. This was a sales campaign. This was a sales program. That there were bonuses and not only bonuses, but promotions and maybe, who knows, a cruise, a watch, or whatever.
All of that.
Is that going to be clawed back? Good luck, right?
Really? Yeah, good luck.
And due to the fact that it was...
After they gave the lady behind the whole thing a big, giant golden parachute of... reported between $97 and $122 million.
The real question is, though, if these were fraudulent accounts that were set up and people were paid a bonus on the earnings, but there really wasn't any earnings, you follow what I'm saying here? Where does the money come from?
Yes, I know exactly what you're saying.
The whole thing is a big... The scam is not
the right word. It's a monstrous scam of the highest order. Mm.
Just shows you that banks... have learned a lesson, finally.
Well, this guy's definitely learned a lesson. He's not going to be shaking too many hands in the near future.
But they learned a lesson that, you know what, if you can't do it, you can't do it this way, we'll just screw the people that way. There's always another way they've learned. And that they'll get away with it.
I'm going to have to go listen to this hearing.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. You can find the C-SPAN hearing. But, you know, what's really interesting also is the big question of the day. Was this as... far spread as this was, limited just to Wells Fargo?
Seems unlikely.
You know, you have somebody that's working at Wells Fargo that's embroiled in this whole thing and says, you know what, I just got an offer from ABC banking institution. I'll go over there, and then whispers, hey, you know what, look what I got an
same
idea.
Thing. Yeah.
So yeah. There was
I'm sure Bank of America's got some. I mean, I mentioned this before, they got rousted from Washington State for some sketchy business practices.
And still, no word from Warren Buffett. No word.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Why'd you get caught, you idiots?
Yeah. So no inflation, we know, at least is what we hear. But we did see recent price hikes by UPS and FedEx. 2 days ago, FedEx comes out with an announcement that they're going to increase the average package cost by about 3.9%. in its air shipping express division, and 4.9% in its ground and home delivery services. So let's just use the number 5% there. Just hold on to that, okay? They can increase their rates by 5%, give or take.
Okay.
They come out with earnings today, and do you know what they do? They come in right on with revenues, but oh my gosh, what a surprise. They raise their outlook by about 4 or 5%.
Yeah, well, gee.
So everybody's like goo-goo about it.
It's unbelievable.
Unbelievable. How'd that happen? I don't know how these companies keep on. I mean, even the U.S. government reduced the price of stamps, which I think was the first time in however long.
Yeah.
And these guys are raising their prices, and I just can't imagine in a world that is now so much more oriented to emails, and you have electronic signatures, and you know, encryption, and what's going on besides delivery of products, of course. But I don't know if this is going to hurt Amazon and the shipping companies. I don't know if it's going to. I don't know, because it's prohibitively expensive to send an actual overnight letter these days.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
I'd rather get on a plane myself and deliver it.
It'd be cheaper.
Probably. It's unbelievable. So, anyway. Now, by the way, we had a couple of things happen with oil, which is interesting. We saw that Venezuela said, you know, we know that there's something going with OPEC and non-OPEC, and we believe there's going to be something coming soon. Oil prices went up like 2% on that. I don't know who is taking the word of a Venezuelan oil minister with what the corruption there.
I have no idea. The
then
I
they come out. They come that. Out the next day and they're whining. There's too much supply and problems with that. And then so oil is going to be an interesting thing to play. But the other thing that's one of those anyone surprised by this is that the ceasefire in Syria is over.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So that, and we're blaming Russia, of course.
Russia. It's their fault.
Yeah, it's their fault. And Russia, of course, we have evidence now that the quote unquote election for Vladimir Putin had ballot box stuffing, and people voting.
I'm stunned.
Yeah, I mean, why did they even put the charade on?
I don't know.
Silly.
I have no idea. The whole thing is crazy.
Anyway, we have a few more notes. Again, we have a little bit of a constraint on time today. So go over to DH Unplugged, check out the show notes, because we have some things on a few other areas also that we talked about. We have some information regarding the 11th sector, which I think is kind of important to take a look at and understand a little bit more. More things about Wells Fargo, as well as some things about that you're being basically ripped off if you buy premium gasoline. So there's a little couple of headlines on that as well. But now, let's saunter over to the stocks.
Indeed.
This is a weekly game that we play. We pick a stock or two or none, looking at maybe some opportunities on the buy side, the sell side, maybe picking a stock to short, to go long. It's a game that we play. It's not a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Of course, if you do choose to use any of the information we talk about here, do your homework, get professional financial advice from a qualified individual, and then understand that you could lose all or some of your money, or you can make some money. So, and we'll note that if Horowitz Company, myself, or John C. Dvorak owns any of these stocks, we'll note that. So, still the same kind of list. It's looking nice and green. A little bit of
Couple readies.
Yep,
don't make a lot of sense, but the red ones you have. One of them is Sensata Technologies Holding, which is a fund that's down 2.8%, and then I have 20th Century Fox, which is 4.something% down,
The content companies have not been doing well very recently.
Yeah, that means they'll rebound.
Yeah, well, possibly.
Then you also have ProShares, which is down 1%. Everything else is up, including the last couple of shorted Wells, and that's because I said not deserving of an existence, so I think that's a good short. And then I did this crazy speculative, but not really speculative, Nuveen Select Tax-Free Income Portfolio 3. I guess it's a fund of some sort.
Yeah, it's got tax-free municipal bonds.
It's a close-ended thing, yeah.
By far the most conservative thing we've ever had on here.
Yes, and the only reason I did it is it's kind of a joke, because I figured it'll just climb forever and be on this list until we clear the list, which we do every so often.
Mm-hmm.
And it's up.
Yep. It is. It's just meandering higher. It's
just meandering higher.
There was some interesting discussions I was reading about some of the automotive groups. And, of course, one of the ones that you picked because insiders were buying like crazy was Penske Automotive.
Yeah.
And that's up like 6% since the end of August, approximately. So I thought that was kind of interesting. The other thing that was interesting was you went short Chipotle Mexican Grill. Now, what's interesting about that is a couple of days after you did that, Ackman came in, the well-known hedge fund manager, and took a position, a very large, well, a decent-sized position in Chipotle, looking to get on the board and do some kind of a turnaround or some kind of a intervention.
What's there to turn around?
The poison. The bad food. The
So he went long.
He went long and he wants to get involved. He's a activist investor. I guess he wants to get involved because the Chipotle guys, the people that run the place, have a real bad, they have a hard time being humble. Like, because burritos are so important. You know?
Yeah, there's nothing. Yeah, you might as well be lording it over everybody because you make burritos.
Yep. Ha ha, I have burritos, you know? So he comes in and he buys a chunk. The stock goes up because, you know, obviously there's a lot of people that follow him and all that. But I got to tell you something. Since he's bought it, stock is severely lower. So there's still a very big image problem with Chipotle. And, you know, there's still a lot of problems that, yeah, plus the... I'll tell you something else. He's got a target on his back because he's got a big mouth. So like Icon with the Herbalife situation.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be careful. I mean, it seems like Icon could be the kind of guy that just trolls this guy for the rest of his existence and just makes his life miserable.
You know, every time, I can see that.
Right? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, this guy says something. He stepped on his shoe or he sneezed on him. I don't know. Something happened once upon a time. And Icon is terminally pissed off.
I guess. I mean, the guy is he's out of control.
Yeah. So I don't have anything, and I'll tell you why. There's some things I was thinking about, but you know what? We're coming in at this point. It's only a game, but, you know, sensibly, for me, coming in ahead of a Bank of Japan announcement and kind of a queasy market to begin with, and on top of that, a central bank announcement.
Yeah.
You know
too
what?
Risky.
It's just you get stopped out in 3 seconds. So I figured we just keep what we have, like the short Shake Shack, which is doing well, and a Biogen, a Barclays. But do you have something?
I, you know, looked and looked and looked, and all I had was Seattle. The guy come up with again is more Seattle Genetics.
Do you have
which
that
just
there?
Keeps you it's know these guys keep buying into it. So I figured that's a big winner someday, but I was going to pass on it.
Mm. Well, that's okay. That's sometimes the better cost of, you know. Listen. It takes as much courage to buy as not buying.
Yeah.
You know, or shorting and not shorting. So, all right, we'll leave it there. Like I said, I know we have a little bit of a tight schedule this evening. You can follow the John Dvorak at The Real Dvorak on Twitter.
Yeah,
of course. I'm Andrew Horowitz with one word. Also, the ever popular, ever famous and wonderful No Agenda show twice weekly. You can listen to it live. You can listen to it on iTunes or play it from a variety of sources. You can go to noagendashow.com. Listen to it on Thursdays.
No Agenda Sunday. Stream if you want to listen live.
Oh, listen live, right. And, of course, check out that album art that they have and also their wonderful deconstruction of news events like none other. I think you'll find that very interesting. By the way, one thing, I happened to notice a tweet somewhere. I don't know who tweeted it either, but there was like a bit of a, I'll call it a bashing by our friend Leo.
Yeah.
Did you see that whole thing?
Yeah.
So he basically was saying that, oh, how horrible that you pick a popular topic and earn money from it.
Yeah, he said that.
That was summation,
he also,
right?
But he also said he doesn't. He says he doesn't like, he's never listened to the show, he says.
Oh, really?
Yeah, if you listen to that little spiel, he says, I never listened to that, and it stinks. I mean, it's almost like a Jewish joke. You know, the food is terrible, and the portions are so small.
Right, exactly.
I mean, it's just like, what? Okay.
I don't know
so
why.
I didn't pay any attention to it.
I don't understand why Leo does it. Every once in a while, he gets like vicious.
He's in these situations, he's just a prick. What am I supposed to say?
I guess.
Glad you brought it up.
Yeah. He, you know what? I'm putting him in right now in the lineup with, ha, I have a technology podcast, like the Chipotle guys, like, ha, I have a burrito. You know what I'm saying?
Burrito. Yeah, okay.
He's a podcast king, he's a burrito king. All right, well, we'll talk next week.
Okay, thanks. Adios.
Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.